Here we go. This is John Curley's Sherry Elicker Show, starring Sherry Elicker and Mary Tyler Moore.
All right.
Still there? Still there?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I'm
I worry that you're just like, because it, you know, it's late where you are, you're out eating peanuts somewhere, or just not paying any attention.
Yeah, I just fell asleep for a minute and came right back.
I like when we got those video cameras again. That was fun. Dive in.
I was.
Try to find a fun song to bring Todd Myers in, so I found this.
We're no strangers to love.
It's Greta Thunberg and Never Gonna Give You Up.
Commitment's what I'm thinking of. Get this wrong. Any other guy would never love.
That yells at adults about them stealing her future. Greta Thunberg and Never Gonna Give You Up. Todd's not gonna. Okay, end your ticket down. Or
wow.
Todd's not gonna come on.
Yeah, he's not gonna like that.
Todd, public relations professional, director there, takes care of anything environmental at the Washington Policy Center, often described as a small think tank. That doesn't seem fair, Todd.
I don't know. We're not so big. And I would just say I'm the last person in the world to criticize anybody else's singing.
Okay. By the way, Todd Myers has been on Dory's show. He's been on this show as well. I want to get you on a regular basis. And when people always say, he's from a think tank, oh, he's conservative, oh, he's a flat earther. Here's what you have said. I think you still stand by this. This is about climate change. Climate models indicate that the impact of current CO2 concentrations on the climate is slight. And within the noise level in the data, in other words, according to the climate models, we are at levels in which it is hard to distinguish the CO2 impacts from natural forces.
That is currently true, yes. In the future, you will be able to distinguish it. But currently, it's very hard to distinguish what the climate signal is from the noise.
I got it. And I've said to you over numerous beers and dinner, why is it that it just seems like the stuff comes from the government and then the media just reports it and then the headline is hottest day ever or we are in huge trouble? Or, for instance, the story that comes up almost every single year, it seems like, is the snowpack in the state of Washington.
Well, because people have a predetermined sort of narrative. And so what they do is they look for evidence of that narrative. Mm-hmm. And they don't look at the data in total. They just try to find things that reinforce their biases. And everybody does that. But if we want to make good policy and want to follow the science, well, we really shouldn't.
I see. So you think there's a natural bias within the person that's reading the press release and then putting it in the paper. So let's talk about the snowpack in the state of Washington. Get ready for a great question from Sherry. It's often, to me, if you ask the average person on the street, you would think that it's dire and that we're in big trouble, that we don't have enough snowpack.
Yeah, and this has been around for a while. So I remember in 2005 when Greg Nickels was mayor, we had a very low snowpack year, and he did an interview with the Seattle Times where he said, I realized we're never going to have normal snowpack again. And just in 2020, the Washington State Legislature actually passed some CO2 reduction targets. And one of the things they cited was the fact that we were losing snowpack already. That was evidence that we were already seeing the impact of climate change. So this has been a narrative for some time that Washington State is losing all of its snow.
And?
We are not. In fact, there is the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, tracks snowpack, and for 13 of the last 16 years in Washington State, we have been above normal. And if you start looking at in about 1980, the trend in snowpack is upward, which you would not expect. What you would expect is due to see a growing climate signature as temperatures are going up. And in fact, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing snowpack increase. Now, that doesn't mean that climate change is a hoax or wrong. I don't believe that. But it does mean that we should be very careful about the predictions that we make, and we should make policy based on, you know, real data rather than just sort of ideological biases and making assumptions.
You have a question for Todd, Sherry, one of your great ones?
I'm going to steal a question, actually, because being that snowpack is not one of my topics that I know a whole lot about living on the East Coast. This is from the article that you wrote in Clark County Today. And someone wrote in, and this is an interesting opinion, and I'm just wondering what you say about it. Somebody named Brian wrote in and said that in the last decade, in average, the snowpack has gone a month earlier than the 20-year normal. So we are getting more snow, yet it has gone a month sooner. What is that tell you? Last year was one of the worst droughts on record. So what do you say to that, that it's sort of evening out a little bit, or that it seems to be not as you might have presented it here?
I say that he is wrong. So you can check the data, right? It would be concerning if you were getting more snowpack in the middle, but then it was melting earlier, and that would leave us with less water. But in fact, what the USDA data, so they update what they call their normal every decade, and it's based on the previous 30 years. And what we saw with the brand new normals that they just redid is that in most of the parts of Washington State, the final snow melts later, about one day later than it did previously. The claim that he is making, which is that it's 1 month earlier, you could only get that result if you start in the 1950s. And you will see a lot of these claims that start in the 1950s about snowpack. The reason that they start in the 1950s is that the 1950s was the snowiest decade of the last century. So basically any line you draw from the 1950s would be downward. But like I said, actually in recent years, the snowpack has been in the other direction.
Yeah.
Precisely the moment when you would be expecting us to lose snowpack because temperatures are getting warmer.
Yeah, so it all depends on where you start the line from, where you begin. And not cherry picking, but you have to start somewhere. So you do that to give yourself the most amount of snow to start with. By the way, Sherry, Todd was the guy that helped me get the only thing I ever really got done at Sammamish City Council. I got plastic bags banned because of Todd. And I fought that. I was ready to die on or suffocate, or I don't know how a plastic bag would kill me on that one. That was
you stopped the bag ban.
I stopped it because of you. Yes, I stopped it. Issaquah still kept they went to the bag ban, but I was able to use all of Todd's science and everything else to explain why plastic is better than either one of those choices, of the three choices of cotton or paper or plastic. And it was like I triumphant. And I had to keep giving credit to Todd Myers, but I kept calling him Todd Meyer. And then some guy goes, you know, his last name's Myers.
Well, Todd, I'm wondering, why are people so quick to believe everything they hear about climate change? It seems like, you know, they aren't really willing to take the time or have the patience to listen to the science that might contradict what's being told to them all the time about this. Is it just that we're lazy, or we're just too willing to believe it? I mean, what do you attribute that to?
So I am a geek and I have no life, but most people are not like me. Most people have lives. And so they don't spend their time looking at the data because they would rather spend it with their family and their friends and their children, things like that. Mm-hmm. So they rely on people telling them, hey, this is a concern and here's what's going on. And they don't know where to get the data. And a lot of it is in just a simply intuitive sense, right? Temperatures are going up. We see that. So it would make sense that snowpack is getting lower. But another thing is happening also, which is that we're getting more precipitation. So because we haven't seen temperatures go up very much, the more precipitation is outweighing the more temperature. So that, I think, is the problem. The other challenge is that politicians love to hype up concerns. And so they create a lot of hype so that they can support the policies that they want. And so it's hard to know what's real and what's hype when people are constantly being bombarded. And given a choice between looking at the data and having a drink with their family, they make the correct decision.
Well, we depend on nerds like you. Todd Myers has had people come after him all the time. I mean, did they say terrible things to him? He's a flat earther and everything else. Todd, in a fun way, Sherry, will say, okay, I'll tell you what, prove to me where I'm wrong. Show me the data that I'm wrong, and I will send you, what was it, $20?
I usually bet $50. So sometimes people will tell me that I'm wrong about this or that. And you know, sometimes I will push back, but oftentimes, you know, fighting with people doesn't work out very much. They simply don't believe it.
Yeah.
So I offer to bet people. And very rarely do they bet, but when they do, I have never lost a bet.
How about that, Sherry, huh?
That's pretty impressive.
He's lonely. He has no friends. Well, he has a bit of a wife for some reason. But he's a nerd who still has $50 in his pocket.
Are you worried at all, Todd, about the claims that climate change is the single biggest thing plaguing our youth, that they are just driven they have so much anxiety over it? Do you buy that?
I worry about it. I do see it. I do see people worried about it and too much anxiety. Here's the thing. Climate change is real. There is a real threat. We need to address it. And there's ways that we can address it.
Yeah.
But it's not catastrophic. And in fact, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN agency that looks at the impacts of climate change, does climate modeling, economic modeling, and under all of their models, even the most serious ones, finds that our economy will be better in the year 2100 than it is today, under any of the scenarios, and much better in developing countries. So it is something to worry about. It is causing harm, but the lives of young people today will not be destroyed by climate change. They will actually be wealthier.
Well, you got to convince this gal right here.
There is no planet B. There is no planet blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And Todd? Todd?
Yes.
Thank you. There no strangers to love. Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center. Thank you, Todd, for coming on. He described it. I said, so explain to me as simply as I can. And I try to explain this to people on the air. He said, it's like this. You're in a car and you're going down a hill with a car. You're pressing down on the gas. Now, how much of the acceleration of the car is gravity and how much of it is your foot on the gas? That's the same thing with the climate change and the heating. How much of it is CO2? How much of it is man-made? And how much is it natural? That's the thing. You try to separate those two. I love how you put those two into perspective and allowed me not to win $50 but to win one argument anyway. Going through, this is where apparently in the show now we talk about everybody who's died. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. No, I won't do that. That's Meatloaf drawing the line of what he'll do for love, Sherry.
He won't do that.
Unfortunately, yeah. The mind reels. I sang this one in the car with a girlfriend who then broke up with me. I know the lines of this one.
She asked you to pull over and she got out?
Right about here. Put my hazards on. So Meatloaf passes away, and the same day we lose Lonnie. Is that what happened?
Louie Anderson, not Lonnie Anderson. Lonnie's still with us. She
looks exactly
the same.
The big trifecta. We would have, okay. Louie Anderson goes. Every once in a while, you end up having two people die on the exact same day. Like for instance, Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson both died on the same day.
I didn't know that. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And poor. Farrah just got lost in the whole mix of the whole thing, and no one ever knew. Same thing with Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, both dying in the same day. Certain stories. So in this case, I don't have any music from Louis Anderson.
Well, Louis, of course, was a comedian, and he died of cancer. This was something I found kind of morbid but interesting. He was one of 11 kids in his family, but it says he's only survived by two sisters. So it sounds like everybody in his family has died, or all of the brothers and sisters, for the most part, have died in his family.
Wow, look at you, really bringing the whole segment down.
I can do math on that, but nothing else.
Yes. Well, the oldest woman, this is, again, the dying segment of the show. I think you can probably tell that. Here she is, 110.
Thelma Sutcliffe is spending her Tuesday going through a basket of birthday cards. She just celebrated her 110th birthday on...
What, was she 110 when she died, or this is
115.
Old
115.
Wow, this is five. Yeah. No one's updated her since this.
Saturday. Yeah. This durable lady was born in 1906 in the Benson neighborhood, long before Benson was part of Omaha, and Teddy Roosevelt was president. She credits working hard to her longevity.
I was born and raised on a farm where the Omaha Country Club is today. That's...
Oh, okay.
Where our farm was.
What kind of farm was it?
Well, they had, at least we did, 160 acres of all kinds, raised everything.
But she also says it's good genes.
But my sister lived also to be 106. But my sister and myself, neither one of us smoked. Now, whether that had something to do with it, I don't know.
One thing is for sure, Thelma Sutcliffe is sharp. She loves her weekly bridge games, reading, and doing her daily crossword.
That came from the neighbors.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't listen anymore.
She also said that never smoking, this is what she attributed to her long life, never smoking, never worrying about anything, and never having kids.
Really?
Never had kids. I like the way that reporter called her durable.
Yeah.
Isn't that your goal, to have somebody eventually call you durable?
My father's term for women was well-preserved.
Well-preserved. Handsome.
That's when the woman has a little more hair in her chin than she can handle in a single week. So this lady guy, she passes at 115, and Louis Anderson, as you pointed out, another death there, and then Meatloaf. So
right, and Lonnie Anderson's still alive.
Yes, thank you for that. By the way, I think Lonnie Anderson married a local guy.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure on that one. And hopefully they're all still alive as well. It's always hard to interview old people because you never know what to do, what question they're, are you supposed to answer? What kind of farm did you have? I mean,
well, and all the questions are so predictable, right? You know, what do you?
Yeah.
How come you've lived so long? And what's your advice for people? And what's your secret? You know.
Yeah, I had a woman come up to me. I was shooting Evening Magazine. She was like 100 years old. I want to play the harmonica. I was like, I'm in the middle of the show. I'm going to play the harmonica. He's like, well, I'm kind of shooting a show right here. I'm going to play it right now. I was like, okay. And with that, she just launched into it. And I thought she'd be like, and then her teeth would fall out. And she just kept going and going and going. I actually have it on video somewhere.
And she'll be writing the next letter song.
Couldn't stop her. Here we go. Yeah, Keel Mortgage, thanks a lot, Keel Mortgage, for sponsoring the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show. We couldn't do it without you. And Keel is the best in business. If you want to be able to get that mortgage of yours, reverse mortgage, your pre-approval letter, there's no one better to call than Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. I don't know, does it feel like a slow news day to you, Sherry, when we're leading with man breaks into house, and then we go right into M&M's and their PR campaign to make their personalities of their candies more inclusive?
I think it's a little bit of a slow news day, but I also think that we get so inundated with the COVID stuff that we're so used to hearing about that 24/7 that now that, you know, the news is kind of backing away from that a little bit, we got some other stories to cover.
Well, luckily for you, we can combine the two because one of the M&Ms, I think the green one, has COVID. It's just come down with COVID. So I don't understand this. I don't know how we can get human beings to be paid a tremendous amount of money. This woman on looking into the camera and in all sincerity explaining the different personalities of the M&M's candies.
M&M's is on a mission to create a world where everyone feels they belong. We're wanting to start a...
Let's remember, talking about candies, little candy-covered chocolates, candies, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Little candies are going to create a world where everyone belongs.
Movement to remind everyone that despite our differences, we have an incredibly powerful thing in common as a community, which is the power of fun. It's actually a reaffirmation, a concrete commitment to what we've always believed as a brand, that the power of fun is the most important way that we can help people feel included and increase that sense of belonging.
On a list of fun things, let's say I had to come up with 1,000 of them, I think eating M&Ms would be somewhere near the bottom, like after popping a boil on my leg. How about for you?
It would probably be, you know, midway. I do like M&Ms.
Get it on the list. Where is it on the list?
Okay, well, you didn't give me the numbers, like 1 to 1,000.
I put popping a boil on my leg near about 700. So where, and I put M&Ms after that.
Okay, so I'm going to give it like maybe 6, no, like 440, at 440.
Ugh.
What do you want it lower? Okay.
No, I'm moving on.
Okay.
It's too late. You've already said that crazy thing.
So as an iconic brand that's been around for actually over 80 years, it's really important that we're evolving over time as well.
Oh.
And one of the most powerful ways we can do that is through our beloved characters. You'll see them as we've done a deep look at them both inside as well as out in terms of reflecting new looks, personalities, and backstories. For example, Green, you'll see her better reflect empowerment and confidence and be known for more than just her shoes. You're going to see Green.
She's a little loose, isn't she, of all the M&Ms I've been reading about. She was sort of like flirty and, you know, you had to kind of keep your eye on her and people thought she was an aphrodisiac. Or, you know, you slipped somebody a couple of Green M&Ms. Remember that was the thing about
her? Well, think about what she was wearing. She was wearing those big white go-go boots.
Yeah, okay.
That says, you know.
Yeah,
what?
That's fun.
Brown together, being a supporting force for women who are throwing shine and not shade.
We're talking
You'll
about candy.
Also see orange really embraces true self, worries and all, and not be afraid to express it. We actually know Orange is the most relatable of our characters in the crew. It's based on some conversations we've had with Gen Z, which we know is the most anxious generation. And beyond our characters, you'll see things such as our increased color palette, as well as the different sizes and shapes of our lentils. And a personal favorite of mine, more of an emphasis on the ampersand. It's a distinctive element of the M&M's logo that connects the two M's together.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Really a signal of our belief as a brand that we are better together.
Can you imagine being married to this woman, Jan Huang, and she comes home from work and how was work today? I mean, really? I went on television and talked about
the ampersand.
And the colors and the orange embracing their true self. I mean, what if this is a candy? These are candies. They're not even listed on the top 10 candies.
Is it also lost on them that this candy isn't that good for you? That, yeah, it may be fun and it may be empowering for the Generation Z that's the saddest generation, whatever she said. But it's also not like it's some power food that's going to make you healthy.
I don't know. It's just so weird. It is so, and this is making big news.
But that's why they did it. Don't you think a couple of people are in a conference room right now just doubled over in laughter that they got this thing through, that they can't take it seriously? They did this because they knew it would get attention.
No, they're in. They're all in. No, I do believe, you know, this.
You think they have backstories for each of the M&M characters?
Apparently,
you think there's a character study?
I'll tell you who got really screwed over was Beige. There used to be like a tan-colored guy.
There was one, yeah.
Yeah, and he just, like, that was the first one out.
Well, you know why? Because Brown. Brown is the boss lady now. She says she's bossy. She's not bossy. She's just the boss.
Okay, I know it seems like I have a story about every story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who the Naked Cowboy is?
No. Should I?
Jacob Naked Cowboy.
I don't think so. Is this a local thing?
No. He stands down at Times Square in New York City.
Oh, yeah, of course. I know
who he
is.
He's got a cowboy
hat underwear.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in his underwear. You can't tell he's Canadian. His guitar is really low. He's got a cowboy hat on, cowboy boots, and he doesn't wear a shirt, all kinds of weather. And he's got a pretty good body, and he stands there and plays the guitar, and people take pictures of him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Naked Cowboy. One day, Naked Cowboy playing the guitar down there in Times Square, having pictures taken. He turns around, looks back up on the gigantic screen behind him, and there, M&M. There's the peanut and the chocolate, and they're wearing cowboy hats and cowboy boots, and they're playing guitars. He takes a picture, goes home to his little hovel that he lives in there in New York, and he finds, I don't know why, my brother in Philadelphia and hires my brother as a lawyer to represent him.
Because he felt his image
absolutely
was ripped off because
completely.
Of Eminem.
Completely.
Okay, because an Eminem can't have a guitar and a cowboy hat without being inspired by this guy?
You sound, well, inspired or just stealing his thing. So my brother goes and calls Eminem, and Chuck goes, so they got a guy in L.A., they got a lawyer in London, they got one here, and we'd all get on there. And Chuck goes, so here I am arguing with the guy in London. The guy goes, well, Chuck, let's be honest. I mean, there's really no need for them to wear pants. They don't have any, you know, genitalia. And Chuck goes, and there's no need for them to have boots either. Okay. They don't really have feet. Well, I mean, you know, we don't want to get technical, do we, Chuck? And Chuck goes, yeah, we're going to get technical. You knew when you put them in cowboy boots and had them play the guitar without any pants on, you knew that that's what was right in front of you with the Naked Cowboy, my client. Like, well, Chuck, you know, I think it's just mere coincidence. It's not a coincidence that you have them playing a guitar with cowboy boots on. Anyway, it took forever, Chuck said, and eventually they sued and got a ton of money. And I said, oh, that'd be a great story for the radio. How much money? He said, I'm not telling you. I said, I'm your brother. He goes, no, I'm not going to tell you. So he never told me, but he goes, it's enough money that now the Naked Cowboy basically spends most of his time not in a hovel, going through the internet, finding other people to sue, and then calling my brother.
It's just insane.
But he's still out
it's
there,
crazy.
Right? Or,
yeah,
or does he? Out. Does he? Are there lookalikes or copycats that are doing the Naked Cowboy thing? Because he's retired. Because he's got to be pretty old by now.
Yes, but he's he can still hang with the best of them out there. You even seen those losers that out there at Times Square? People dressed up in really weird Spider-Man costumes, supposed to get a picture with them, and then Elmos, and they all smell like barbecue sauce. You ever been out there?
Of course. Of course. Who has it? Yeah, of course.
Weird mix of people. And there's like Mickey Mouse, but it's not really Mickey Mouse because they know they'd get sued, so it sort of looks like Mickey Mouse.
Right. Those, or there's characters that some of the women, and if you get up too close, they've got so much makeup on, and it's just like caked on, they're playing some weird thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty
awful.
What
was that sentence you want to try to clean? Never mind.
It's just insane. It's crazy.
Here we go. You're writing to us at mynorthwest.com. You come on in through the State Roofing text line at 1-888-973-5476. I tried to get Jacob Ryan Smith on the phone. That's the man that wrote that song, Sherry, the song about writing your letters. He's working on a new song for Todd Myers because Todd's coming on. I'm trying to get Todd on once or twice a month to talk about climate change because climate change seems to be absolutely everywhere. And Todd goes through the numbers and tries to put everything in perspective. So I said, I'll get Jacob to write a song, Jacob Ryan Smith, about Todd. So I said, wouldn't it be fun to come on? You could apologize for the other song and then kind of give us some idea what you're working with for Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I can't. I'm going to Shabbat. So let's shut that down.
Okay.
When someone's going
to
Shabbat, you can't talk somebody out of a religious thing.
No. You don't want to do that.
He said, I'd love to, but I'm going over my cousins for Shabbat. And they don't have a piano. Yeah. So anyway, he said some other time we get him on there and have him apologize for that, the Write Us Your Letters song. I don't know why this comes back again. You have this weird fascination with baloney or bologna. Can we just get this thing out of the way?
Yeah. So this is what it says. Okay. So
all right.
And I'm going to ask you this because I think there might be another story in here, but I don't know. Okay. Here, this is from USA Today. Ever turned a slice of bologna into a face mask with bites taken out of it for eyes and a mouth? Have you ever done that?
No, but I do have my mom used to take two pieces of bologna, fold them in half to make them look like a rear end, and then stick a raisin in the middle of it and then leave me a note in my lunchbox. There's a surprise in your sandwich.
That's great. I knew it. I knew there'd be a story. Well,
so gross.
Oscar Mayer is paying homage to the classic childhood tradition with a new skincare product inspired by the lunch meat. So it's not really baloney. It's not like it's a baloney mask. It's actually a Korean beauty company has put together this mask, and it's kind of the same color. But these are these face sheets, and they've got, you know, a lot of moisturizer, and you put it on your skin. It's like a big mask and everything. But it's packaged like the old Oscar Mayer bologna. And it's sold out now. People are buying this thing up like crazy, and they say it's nostalgia, that people just like it. And it looks like, you know, like you're cut out the bologna. I like your mom's idea way better, though.
You know what's so sad is that I didn't even like bologna sandwiches, but my mom thought it was so funny that she would continue to fold up. And you knew what it was. When you get the note, you're like, okay, mom folded two pieces of bologna to make it look like a rear end.
But wait, did she put it in bread like it was underpants or something?
You had to take the top of the bread off. As soon as a sandwich wasn't cut in a fancy, lovable way, that's how I used to describe it, when you'd cut it diagonally. As soon as it wasn't cut, I was like, oh, God. So here's the bologna with the raisin coming out of its butt. And I was like, oh, hey, Mom, get some new material.
It would have worked on me every time. Every time.
Really?
Yes.
We are bored. We're all bored now.
That's right. All right. Listen, is it, you can still buy the thing, or is it not? You can't get them for another 6 months.
It says our bologna has a nickname, and it's B-E-A-U-T-Y. Like the old, you know, my bologna has a first name.
My bologna has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My bologna has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me why, I'll say, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A.
There you go. Eat it every day.
Yes. Fine. Yes. They sold out, but they're going to get more in stock, and it's just flying off the shelves.
Yeah. Okay. You know, thanks for allowing me to bring back great memories of my mom. By the way, other stories. Todd Meyer will come on to talk about snowpack. We'll get to that story because it's always, do we don't have enough, and we're heading into another sort of climate change problem. Meatloaf dies at the age of 74. On a scale of 1 to 5, how emotionally moved are you by the death of Meatloaf?
That would be a 1. How about you?
I think anyone named Meatloaf, eventually, you know, they're coming to an end a little sooner than expected. But 74 is just a little beyond. I think he should have gone to about 77 years old. Yeah, that's about average for the American male. But I always liked him as a performer. I always thought it was odd that he was so big and had so much hair and sweated as much as he did and could sing such high notes. So there's the I don't think I'll be asked to do the eulogy.
OK. Do you know he changed his name from Marvin to Michael? You know why?
Does that have something to do with bologna?
Somewhat, yeah. He was very heavy as a kid, and there was an ad, there was a commercial that said, poor fat Marvin can't wear Levi's. And his name was Marvin, and he was very self-conscious, so he changed his name legally to Michael.
Right, and then the ad came out, give it to Mikey, Mike will eat anything, and then he changed his name to Billy.
Meatloaf.
Yeah, Meatloaf. All right, gee whiz. Chris Martin is a musician. He has an amazing group. I have all their albums. Meatloaf passing away, are you going to commemorate it somehow and do a set for him sometime soon?
He was one of those people that I actually, when I heard it, I thought he had already passed, actually.
Oh my God.
But I don't understand why no one's talking about Louis Anderson. That affected me way more. He died today, too.
I thought Louis Anderson died a long time ago.
So did I.
Okay. See, Chris? Two can play that game.